Chapter 5, Communication. Quote, "You can have brilliant ideas, but if you can't get them across, your ideas won't get you anywhere." Lee Iacocca. An important factor in the mentor-protege relationship is the method in which you'll communicate with each other. Your arrangement will vary according to the proximity of your protege, whether they work for your company, for another company in your area, or are located remotely. It's important to determine not only how you'll communicate with your protege, but also how frequently you'll interact. This chapter will explore the various avenues of communication and assist you in creating a comprehensive information framework that will enhance your mentor-protege relationship. When, where, and how? Communication basics. Accessibility. Communication with your protege can be limited based on several factors, including physical location, job schedule and duties, family situation, external obligations. Flexibility is important here. You and your protege should discuss each of these areas in order to determine the best ways to accommodate each of your needs. Physical location. Depending on the situation, you may or may not be able to physically meet with your protege. Each scenario provides a separate set of possibilities, and you should determine the rules according to what works for both of you. In-company mentorships are the simplest in terms of location. You both work at the same company, and you can meet in your office, a conference room, or any accessible area at your place of employment. You can also arrange to meet for lunch if your schedules don't coincide often enough. External mentorships, in which your protege resides in your area, can allow for face-to-face meetings. You may be able to have your protege come into your office for meetings, or you can choose a neutral meeting point, such as a restaurant, library, or public facility. Virtual mentorships typically consist of online communication through email and file transfer. You can also set up a private online forum or bulletin board for you and your protege to exchange ideas through. Of course, no matter what your physical location, you can always communicate via telephone, fax, and email. Job schedule and duties. You and your protege must work around your schedules in order to determine the best times and frequencies for meeting. One of you may work overtime, report to work early, or put in time on weekends on occasion. If you or your protege work in a career where you're often on call, such as real estate, medical, or legal, you should establish what constitutes grounds to break off the meeting and how you'll reschedule if you lose time. Family situation. A young bachelor or single female is likely to have more free time than a married person or parent. Single parents in particular will have difficulties in the area of flexibility. Both mentor and protege should establish meeting times that are convenient to both of you and do not interrupt or strain other areas of their lives. It's sometimes tricky, but it can be done. External obligations. Executives often have responsibilities that extend outside of the typical 9-to-5 office setting. For example, you may have meetings, seminars, conferences, or company events taking place. These external obligations should be considered when scheduling time with your protege, and your protege may have other obligations as well. Primary communication. It's best if you determine the primary means of communication that will be the least disruptive for both you and your protege. For example, you may be in a position where you're not able to accept phone calls regularly, in which case email may be your preferred form of communication. Conversely, you may be in a profession which requires you to carry a cell phone to remain in constant contact and would therefore be able to take phone calls anytime. Be sure to consider the needs of your protege as well when determining your method of primary communication. The stage they are at now in their career is likely a stage that you have been through yourself, so you'll probably understand what works and what doesn't. When it comes to virtual mentoring, the primary communication medium is email by default. Mentors and protégés who work remotely often find creative ways to communicate with one another, including email, forums, bulletin boards, shared websites or blogs, and live chat, voice chat, or instant messaging. Of course, virtual mentors should also schedule regular phone conversations with their protégés in lieu of face-to-face meetings. Regularity. Another important consideration is how often you and your protege will communicate and how much time you'll spend working together. At the outset of the relationship, you should determine how long the mentorship will last, typically 1 or 2 years, the total amount of interaction time required to meet your goals, and how often you'll meet, once or twice per week for a few hours, 1 or 2 days a month for extended periods, or any other arrangement that works. You should also figure out ahead of time how you'll reschedule in the event of emergencies or disruptions, and whether there are certain blocks of time during the period where either of you will be unavailable for an extended amount of time. It's a good idea to meet as often as possible without placing stress on other areas of your life. Creating a schedule. Sit down with your protégé and compare schedules to determine the best times for meeting and working together. You may want to prepare spreadsheets which you can overlap to find when you both have free time. For more challenging schedules, alternative times to consider arranging meetings might be early mornings, lunch breaks, evenings, weekends, and minor national holidays. Another good strategy in regard to scheduling is to determine goal markers that should be met after certain periods of time, and then scheduling enough time to meet those goals. Be sure to note the communication rules you and your protégé have set forth on the schedule. For example, if your protégé has questions between meetings, indicate whether they should give you a call or simply send an email, which you can answer when you have time. Both of you should have a copy of your schedule and know how much notice you should attempt to give if you have to cancel or reschedule a meeting. With the exception of true emergencies, last-minute cancellations are disrespectful when enacted from either party. You should extend the same respect in regard to your protégé's time as you expect to receive. Documentation. There are many good reasons to document every aspect of your mentoring program for both you and your protégé. Conscientious record-keeping is a good practice for any business undertaking. It'll help you keep track of your progress and assist in keeping your program on a focused path. Documentation is also good for you as a mentor, as you can provide concrete evidence of the work you've done. It's also helpful to be able to review the aspects of your program and identify what worked and what didn't, so you can take on a new protégé and improve the process. The protégé also benefits from documentation. For them, it's also a useful tool for review as well as a means to provide evidence of having worked with you. They can also track their progress throughout the mentorship and realize how far they've come and determine whether their original goals are being met. Fostering clear communication. Communication skills are perhaps the most important step in a successful mentor-protégé relationship. Poor communication can lead to misunderstanding, a lack of enjoyment, and failure to transfer knowledge in a meaningful way. Following is a guide to clear, concise communication in several forms. Conversation skills. With the increasing reliance on electronic communication, conversation is becoming a lost art form. It can seem difficult to get your point across verbally, and equally hard to understand what someone else is trying to say to you. There are several things you can do to improve your verbal communication skills and ensure that you're effectively transferring and receiving information with your protégé. Stay positive. If you're communicating criticism or listening to complaints, it's easy for either of you to take things personally. Try to maintain a positive mindset and recognize that when it comes to problems with your mentor-protégé relationship, the disagreement is likely not personal and should be viewed with detachment. Look to the benefit that'll come from solving the problem, and be sure your protégé understands that you are not attacking him or her. If you must criticize, be sure to state what you intend as the end result of your suggestions. Look for common ground to start from, and begin the criticism with a statement like, "I want to help you improve your chances of success in this area or on this project." This lets your protégé know that you're offering constructive commentary rather than saying they're inept or worthless. Listening is perhaps the most important aspect of verbal communication. In order to be a good listener, you must remain focused on the conversation. During a face-to-face or telephone meeting with your protégé, be sure to clear your mental plate of other concerns. Trying to think about more than one topic at a time will cloud your focus, and you may miss some of what is being said or take something out of context. It's a good idea to rephrase statements you suspect were not meant the way they sounded. For example, if it seems the concern being brought up involves you personally rather than a business issue, before you become angry or offended, try saying, "Did you mean to say XXX?" and reorganize the statement in a less confrontational way. This will diffuse tense emotions on both sides. Don't be afraid to ask questions in order to further understand or clarify the issue, and be ready to admit to not knowing something if you truly don't know. If an issue arises that neither you nor your protégé are familiar with, you can take advantage of the opportunity to learn something new together. There are also certain conversation skills you can develop that will help you to become a better leader. Some approaches are better than others, and when you are attempting to convey knowledge to someone else, there are things you can do to phrase your statements in a way that will leave a lasting impression and not sound harsh or overbearing. Avoid using metaphors, stock phrases, or common corporate analogies when explaining concepts or strategies to your protégé. Many of today's corporate buzz phrases have become so overused that they're no longer meaningful. Instead, use clear, straightforward language and sincerity when launching into explanations or strategies. Do not ignore uncertainty, difficulties, or potential failure that may arise in your relationship. Your protégé understands that we're all human, and mistakes happen. It's a mistake to believe that you must present a flawless facade where your protégé is concerned. Allowing your protégé to realize that even you can commit errors will help them persevere through their own mistakes. Resist reacting and respond instead. When your protégé presents you with a question, problem, or challenge, it's tempting to react emotionally. Practice offering a thoughtful response instead. Identify your hot buttons and be ready to diffuse your own emotional reactions when they arise. Avoid making statements or suggestions if you don't intend to follow through. Failure to keep your promises can evoke cynicism and a jaded attitude, which in turn will prove detrimental to the mentor-protégé relationship. Trust will be eroded, and neither of you will benefit from the mentoring process. When offering constructive criticism, provide specific feedback and examples that illustrate your point. For example, don't just say, "You need to work on your attitude." Rather, cite examples, like, "If you believe you can't perform well on this project, you won't be able to. It would help if you shift your focus and give it your best shot instead of complaining that the task is too hard and not trying at all." Remember to offer positive feedback as well, but don't get too flowery with your praise. You want to let your protégé know when they're doing a good job, but too much praise can lead to a lack of effort. Keep your protégé in the loop in regard to developments in the company, your career, and your mentoring process. Offer progress reports periodically to confirm that you're working toward your goals. Lack of communication is just as detrimental as poor communication. Personal interface, your body language. Quote, "What you are stands over you the while and thunders, so that I cannot hear what you say to the contrary." Ralph Waldo Emerson. In business communication, the way you present yourself is at least as important, if not more so, than the words you speak. Learning effective body language is an important skill, not only in the mentor-protégé relationship, but for your career in general. Your body language impacts your success. There are four keys to effective business body language: posture, eye contact, facial expression, and handshake technique. Each of these keys possesses a set of rules that will help you make the best impression on your protégé, as well as your colleagues, industry personnel, and supervisors. Posture. First impressions are still important, and your posture says a lot about you before you get the chance to speak. The way you carry yourself has a significant impact on the way others perceive you. If you slouch, droop your shoulders, or sag in place, it can project the idea that you're not sure of yourself. Proper business posture includes stomach in, chest out, head up, and shoulders back. The way you stand can turn people away or command respect. It also affects your confidence level. You can feel grounded and balanced if you stand with your feet planted firmly, 6 to 8 inches apart, with one slightly in front of the other. Additionally, you can reveal through your posture whether or not you want others to approach you. Two people engaged in a conversation who are forming a rectangle, squarely facing each other with neither turned to one side, have effectively closed off their space and don't want to be interrupted. If one or both members of the conversation are angled away with feet pointing outward, like two sides of a triangle, at least one of them is open to others joining them. Eye contact. Maintaining eye contact during a conversation is critical for two reasons. It lets the other person know you're paying attention, and it allows you to read what they're saying even if their meaning is different from the words they speak. You should make eye contact as soon as you begin a conversation. Of course, if you're attempting to engage someone, eye contact can attract attention before a conversation begins. Continue throughout the exchange, even when you're saying goodbye. One thing to note is that prolonged direct eye contact can be disconcerting. Instead of staring straight at the other person's eyes, try to concentrate on the point between the nose and lips. Remain focused, but not necessarily sharpened, and don't let your gaze drift downward. Proper eye contact can seem something of an art form, but keep practicing. It's a good idea to maintain contact for 80 to 90% of the conversation. This avoids appearing disinterested or, conversely, overbearing. Glancing away occasionally is acceptable, but do not look over the other person's shoulder. This can indicate that you're looking for someone more interesting to talk to. Facial expression. A smile is a powerful expression. Smiles can create a positive and upbeat environment, convey interest and excitement, or show empathy and concern. Your smile can enhance your image and help you appear interesting and engaging, a person worthwhile to converse with. However, smiles can be overused or appear phony. It's a good idea to reserve smiling for conversation rather than enter a room with a smile already plastered on. Using smiles sparingly but genuinely will bolster a professional image. Handshake technique. The business handshake is a widely accepted form of nonverbal communication. Many people will either consciously or unconsciously judge you by the way you perform this social ritual. It's generalized that men have stronger, firmer handshakes than women, but this is not always the case. Women can also develop firm handshakes that convey authority and confidence. Familiarizing yourself with common types of handshakes will help you improve your nonverbal communication and become better at interpreting others. The controlling handshake occurs when the hands meet and one person purposefully maneuvers to the top. This indicates the controller wants to be in charge of the conversation. The dead fish handshake happens when the hands are wet, usually for one of two reasons: nervous sweat or the transfer of a cold beverage from the dominant hand in order to shake. In either case, gripping a dead fish is an unpleasant experience and will not convey a good impression. If your hands sweat, be sure to rub your palm lightly on a napkin, tablecloth, or even your pants before accepting a handshake. Also, if you're in a situation where handshakes are expected, remember to hold drinks with your non-dominant hand. The limp-fingered handshake most often occurs with women, who tend to extend only their fingers rather than the entire hand. This not only appears weak, it can also be painful when the fingers are gripped in a forceful handshake. It's important to extend your full hand horizontally and flat without cupping it. The sandwich or politician's handshake is fairly self-explanatory. This involves engulfing the other person's hand in both of yours. To most people, it's uncomfortable to receive this type of handshake. It's an invasion of private space and should be used only with people you know well on a personal level. What constitutes a good handshake? You should hold the other person's hand firmly and shake, not pump, no more than 3 times. Maintain constant eye contact and keep a positive outlook. Always act as though you're genuinely pleased to meet the person. Better written communication. Much of your communication with your protege will be written, particularly if you use email frequently or are acting as a virtual mentor. When crafting written correspondence, such as letters, reports, and progress records, there are rules you can apply to ensure effective communication. Email writing involves some of the same principles, but there are many differences in method and execution. Written correspondence. Effective written communication is a difficult task for many, particularly when writing is not part of their regular job responsibilities. Clear business writing is an important skill to master. During the course of the mentor-protege relationship, you'll likely write reports, documentation for your protege to study, and letters of recommendation. Each of these documents should be formulated with clarity in mind. Strive to keep your written business communication free of clutter and extraneous ideas. Wordy writing tends to distract rather than impress, and it can easily muddle your point. It's acceptable to use a professional level of language, but try to steer clear of using buzzwords, clouded metaphors, and hype in your business communication. Get to the point as soon as possible. The tone of your written communication should be professional but courteous. Engaging business writing addresses a single reader. Do not be afraid to use the pronoun you in your writing. This brings a sense of immediacy and connection, and also allows the reader to identify with your message. You should also be convincing and complete when conveying written ideas. Electronic etiquette. Effective email communication was practically a lost art at its inception. Email equates with speed, and a majority of emails reflect that with poor spelling and grammar, incomplete thoughts, and unclear messages. One of the often unrealized advantages of improving your email communication is that it encourages others to do the same when replying to you. If you send sloppy emails, don't answer promptly, or come across as vague or harsh, you can expect to receive the same communication from others. Here are some pointers that will help you sharpen your email etiquette. Think before you send. Email is a fast form of communication, but you still don't have to dash off a quick reply and forget about it. Reread what you've written before you send the message. Is your intention clear? Will the recipient understand what you're saying, or can your message be misinterpreted? Messages in the body of an email should be short and concise. Because of the way most email programs appear on a screen, it's difficult to read long or complicated data, such as reports, in a reduced area. Longer electronic messages should be sent as attachments. Remember that email is by no means confidential. Refrain from including personal or sensitive information in electronic communication. Never type in all caps. It looks like you're shouting at the reader. If you want to emphasize a point, do so through your use of language or with bold or italicized typeface. However, be aware that some formatting does not transfer properly between email programs, another good reason to ensure your message is clear and concise. Use proper grammar and spelling. It may be easier and faster not to bother with trifles like punctuation and capitalization, but your message will be difficult to read and may cause the recipient to not bother trying to figure out what you meant to say. Make your subject line active rather than passive. Instead of sending an email with the subject project update or status report, state what's included and what actions you wish the recipient to take. For example, information on the Smith project you wanted, or need your input on the status of this account. This will encourage the recipient to read and respond to your message. Once again, always double-check your message before you click on send. Check for spelling and grammar, a compelling subject line, and clear expression of the information you're sending. Chapter 6. Working with a Protégé. There are many aspects involved in working with a protégé. You'll find it beneficial to do some planning before you begin the relationship so that both sides are clear on what's expected of them and what they expect to gain during the process. This chapter will walk you through the process of establishing the relationship and working with your protégé toward a mutual beneficial goal. Stages of a mentorship. Typically, the mentor-protege relationship has four separate and distinctive stages. Orientation. During the first 3 to 6 months, depending on the frequency of interaction, you and your protege are getting to know each other. This period lays the foundation for the relationship. You'll be developing expectations, building trust, and preparing to learn from each other. Education. The middle stage of a mentorship is generally the most rewarding for both you and your protégé. At this stage, solid trust has developed, bringing a greater sense of confidence. Both you and your protégé will feel comfortable challenging one another and offering ideas freely. Dissolution. Mentoring relationships typically last 1 to 2 years, until your protégé feels ready to move on without you. When you reach dissolution, it's important to step back and discuss with your protege how the relationship should continue. Redefinition. When the mentoring process ends, you and your protege can interact as equals on a more casual basis. You'll have established a foundation that will allow for a long and continually prosperous business relationship. You can expect to put forth the most effort during the orientation and education stages of the mentorship. If the process is successful, dissolution and redefinition of the relationship become natural steps for the conclusion. Pitfalls of mentoring. As with any relationship, mentor-protege partnerships do not always succeed. It can be frustrating to enter a relationship only to discover that you're not as compatible as you thought, or that, for whatever reason, things just aren't going to work out. However, there are things you can do to give your mentor relationship the best chances for success. Following are the most common problems of mentorships and the best possible solutions for avoiding those problems. Problem: the mentor and protege are not a good match. Solution: don't rush through the selection process. Take your time in evaluating potential proteges to ensure the best chance of choosing one you can work with successfully. You should never leap at the opportunity to mentor someone on the basis of a recommendation or request. Always investigate before agreeing to take on a protege. Problem: you or your protege possess unrealistic expectations. Solution: make sure you're clear about what your protege should expect to receive during the mentoring process. If it appears that more will be expected, do not agree to the relationship. You should not be expected to give more than you're prepared to offer. This also applies to your expectations of your protege's performance. Be prepared to discover what the protege can offer you, and don't expect more than what is agreed upon. Problem: confidentiality is breached on either side of the relationship. Solution: work to develop trust between yourself and your protege. Be sure that your protege understands what happens between you should be treated as confidential, and be prepared to extend that courtesy in return. Creating a contract with a non-compete clause, as discussed in a previous chapter, is a good way to avoid breaches of confidentiality and to ensure that recourse is in place should a breach occur. Defining goals. During the orientation stage, you and your protege should each have clear goals in mind. These goals will likely shift in scope and direction as you move through the process, but it's helpful to create a roadmap from which to start. Your goals. Knowing what you expect to contribute and take away from the relationship can assist you in formulating a successful mentoring strategy. In the initial stage, you should determine the following. What aspects of your industry should your protege learn more about in order to become successful? What experiences have you had that will allow you to impart the necessary knowledge? What form should this information take? Written notes, hands-on practice, actual involvement and participation, or a combination of these? What was the most beneficial advice you received during your career, and how will you communicate this to your protege? How far do you anticipate taking your protege? Will you attempt to assist him in reaching your level? Do you want to help her surpass you? To what extent do you expect your protege to participate in your work? What clearances or permissions does he require for a meaningful experience? What do you expect to learn from your protege? Are there any new developments in your industry in which she may be knowledgeable? What can you realistically expect your protege to accomplish during the mentor relationship? Will your protege react better to a nurturing approach or a tough love method? Which attitude is generally more prevalent in your industry? What contact should you introduce your protege to? Which events should she attend? Where can he find further assistance? Your protege's goals. Encourage your protege to determine his or her own set of goals for the relationship. This will allow for greater participation and a higher degree of interaction, as well as smoother exchanges of ideas. Questions your protege should answer include: what would you most like to learn from your mentor? To what extent do you expect to be involved in your mentor's career responsibilities? What areas of your industry are you most interested in learning more about? What's your ultimate career goal, to reach the level of your mentor or surpass it? Which contacts and industry events are you most interested in becoming involved with? How much time and effort are you willing to invest in the relationship? What knowledge and information can you offer your mentor? Do you react better to a nurturing approach or a tough love mentality? What drives you to excel? What experiences have you had that will benefit the relationship? What's your strongest learning style? Written communication, vocal instruction, hands-on learning, or a combination of these? When you've both completed your goals, share them with each other so you can establish common ground and decide which areas are of primary importance. You can utilize your goals to help you plan your mentoring path and arrive at your intended destination. Creating a personal statement. Quote, throughout the centuries, there were men who took first steps down new roads, armed with nothing but their own vision. Ayn Rand. A personal vision statement is a refined, concise statement of your goals. Creating a personal vision statement can help you remain focused on your objectives and tailor your mentoring relationship to suit your vision. Both you and your protege should develop personal vision statements to guide you through the relationship and toward your ultimate career objectives. Defining your vision. Your personal vision statement should cover not only what you hope to achieve from your career, but from life in general. A personal vision statement can be a powerful tool for goal definition and focus. Why is it important to define your vision? One reason is that without it, others can manipulate your vision and lead you to believe you desire whatever it is they desire for you. It's better to be directed by your own goals rather than the expectations of others. Your vision should include what you'd like to see from yourself as well as from the world around you. Whether your ultimate goal is as simple as adopting a healthier attitude and perspective, or as lofty as changing the world, your vision allows you to hone your efforts toward a single purpose. This definition can help you and your protege determine where your efforts are best spent during the mentoring process. Defining your vision requires concentration. You should give serious thought to your goals and your wishes. Choose a quiet, uninterrupted place and time to outline your answers to the following questions. What are the things you truly enjoy doing? This can apply to both your career and your personal life. What brings you the most happiness? Include emotions and external events here. Recall the three best moments of your life. What was it about them that brought you joy? Who was involved in these moments? Were any of them solo efforts? What three things would you do if you had unlimited financial resources? List the issues you care deeply about. If you had the time and the means, what would you do in regard to these issues? What values are most important to you? Family, faith, success, recognition, honesty, money. What are your strengths? In what areas do you excel? What are you doing now that you'd like to stop doing or do less? Writing the vision statement. Once you've brainstormed to define your vision, then it's time to pull that information together and create a concise statement that reflects your ultimate goal. You should include several areas of your life in your personal vision statement. The statement would be written in present tense and reflect the way you'd like to visualize yourself. Don't limit yourself to the mundane or apparently achievable. With your personal vision statement, you should feel free to reach for the stars and believe that nothing is impossible. One way to create a personal vision statement is to distill the information you generated in the previous exercise into several short statements, including the main things that motivate you and bring you personal satisfaction, your greatest strengths, abilities, and personality traits. At least two things you can start doing now that will bring you heightened satisfaction in your life. Try to write your personal vision statement in 50 words or less. This brevity allows you to focus on what matters most to you and align your actions with your goals. Here's a sample personal vision statement. I'm working in a career I love and earning a sufficient salary to live comfortably. I have a positive outlook and can laugh at myself. I have plenty of time to spend with my family. I'm helping others advance their careers and taking art classes. Effective meetings. Your primary interaction with your protege, unless you're engaged in a virtual mentorship, will be through meetings. Holding effective meetings is an important step in the mentoring process and a key to ensuring the overall success of the mentor-protege relationship. What are the elements of an effective meeting? It's likely you've participated in or even led meetings during the course of your employment. One way to ensure smooth mentor-protege meetings is to analyze meetings you've attended in the past and determine what has worked and what could have been improved. You can then apply these findings to your own meetings. Here are more tips to holding effective meetings with your protege. Plan ahead of time. You and your protege will likely have time constraints when it comes to personal meetings. It's a good idea to ensure that the time you do have is used as effectively as possible. Before each meeting, take the time to determine what will be covered during your time. Plan a tentative schedule that outlines each topic and the approximate length of time you expect to spend on each one. Be sure to leave a bit of a buffer to handle unexpected issues or delays. Establish communication protocol. Although it's not necessary to require your protege to raise his hand when asking a question, you should establish some ground rules for discussion. For example, you can agree not to interrupt each other when one of you is speaking, or hold questions until the conclusion of a particularly involved presentation. Another good protocol is in regard to criticism. Make it a point for both you and your protege to always state the positive before the negative. Express what you like about an idea or action before you criticize what doesn't work. This will avoid potentially wasteful disagreements. Encourage prepared and spontaneous questions. Let your protege know what you intend to discuss at each meeting ahead of time, and encourage her to prepare a list of questions on the topics. Any questions that are not covered during the course of the discussion can then be addressed easily. You should also prepare questions you'd like to ask your protege regarding progress or ideas. However, don't limit the questioning to prepared lists. Encourage your protege to ask any questions generated by the presented information, and be prepared to give thoughtful, reflective answers. Spontaneous questions can often open the floor for new ideas that will benefit you both. Record the proceedings. It's important to remember what you discuss with your protege at each meeting. Taking notes is a favorable idea, however, it's often difficult to do so in a one-on-one situation. A better idea may be to have a tape recorder or a microcassette machine to record everything. Encourage your protege to bring one as well, or allow him to borrow your recording and take notes or make a copy. Encourage time for reflection. After each meeting, both you and your protege should take some time to consider what you've learned and digest the new information. You should enter this period of reflection as soon as possible following the meeting, while it's still fresh in your mind. Make note of your reflections and outline possibilities for new discussions, new questions, and things that can be improved for your next meeting. You may wish to involve your protege in the planning process for your meetings as well. Making time for mentoring, the balancing act. As you're probably aware, it's important to balance your work life and your personal life in order to avoid stress. Adding the responsibility of a mentor relationship can cause strain if you're not prepared to integrate the additional time with your current lifestyle. There are many ways to find time for mentoring and many reasons to make the effort. Mentoring is a rewarding experience. It's to your benefit to juggle your schedule and make the time to nurture a protege. Here are some time management tips for the mentoring process. Boundaries are important and should be observed on both sides. Be sure to make it clear to your protege when you are and are not available and expect to do the same for them. Do not commit to more time than you can realistically handle. It's easy for you or your protege to become frustrated with a lack of quality time. Try to remain as flexible as possible and learn to take advantage of the time you do have. Make it a rule to reserve personal conversation for email or other casual communications and only discuss business during face-to-face meetings. If you have personal activities that take up time, consider cutting back on them for the duration of the formal mentoring process. Make fewer trips to the gym or downplay your commitments to outside groups or organizations. Consider combining your career responsibilities with your mentoring process. If you're attending an industry event or a company meeting that would benefit your protege, find out whether you can bring them along. If you truly desire to make a difference in another person's life through mentoring, you'll find the time to take on this enriching challenge. drawing the line. In a mentor-protege relationship, it's easy to do too much for your protege. Keep in mind that you're enabling your protege to succeed on their own merits. Doing too much for them can allow them to rely on your support instead of turning to themselves and striving to perform better. Though you should certainly attempt to give your protege every advantage, there are areas in which you can take things too far. Here are some common mistakes mentors make in extending their services. Offering financial support. Some protégés may ask their mentors to buy a product, invest capital in a business enterprise, or even help pay personal bills. Though your protégé may actually be in dire financial straits, or the venture proposed may seem worthwhile, providing financial support is not a good idea. Financial investments change the dynamics of the mentor-protégé relationship. If you have a monetary stake in an enterprise run by your protégé, you're no longer a mentor, you're a partner. Also, when it comes to personal bills, if you agree to help out, your protégé may become dependent upon you. If you're asked to invest in a project or otherwise offer financial assistance during the course of a mentoring relationship, it's a good idea to refuse gently, explain why you must refuse, and offer to discuss the possibility at the conclusion of the relationship, if the venture is something you believe will succeed. Working for your protégé. Your protégé may ask you to perform tasks for him that he would be better suited doing himself. Examples of these include writing a resume, question fellow employees about the protégé's job performance, or complete applications for scholarships or grants. These are skills your protégé should be developing himself. If your protégé approaches you with such a request, you can bow out gracefully. State that you're glad she has faith in your abilities, but explain that it would be to her advantage to take on the task herself. You can offer assistance and guidance, but do not complete the task in your protégé's stead. Becoming a personal counselor. Mentors and protégés work closely together toward a common goal. Therefore, it's only natural that some personal exchanges will occur. You'll likely get to know about each other's families, hobbies, and personal interests outside of your careers. It's certainly important to be involved to some extent, as a part of your task as a mentor is to assist your protégé in balancing work and personal affairs. However, there are certain personal issues in which you should not become involved. If your protégé is experiencing marital difficulties, mental health problems, substance abuse struggles, or other potentially damaging hardships, you should not offer to coach or advise regarding them. One step in avoiding too much personal involvement is to set clear boundaries at the outset of the mentor-protégé relationship. Discuss the fact that there are certain issues which should not be brought into the workplace. Let your protégé know that you do care, but you cannot offer extensive personal guidance. If your protégé brings a massive personal struggle to your attention, you should suggest other avenues for resolution, such as a company counselor or psychiatrist, mental health hotline, or community intervention program. For serious issues in which your protégé demonstrates the potential to harm himself or someone else, you should not hesitate to report the issue to authorities.